Well, today I'm being visiting with the Honorable Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. And Governor, I'm glad that you've taken the time to visit with us here at KLEM and the folks up here in Northwest Iowa. And always good to chat with you. Too bad we couldn't see each other in person, but this is still pretty good. But let's talk about some of the issues that are being facing Iowans and everything. And we'll start with a question I had. I know that you addressed this during your news conference on Wednesday, but we're starting to see, I think, those who wanted to be vaccinated have gotten vaccinated, or at least maybe the first stage of it. But there's a large amount of people that I talk to that just have no interest whatsoever in having any kind of a COVID vaccine. What more can we do? What more is the state trying to do to encourage everyone to get vaccinated?
Yeah, well, we're continuing to do that. I've got the Lieutenant Governor is up in Sioux City today doing a vaccine clinic. It really is tied to his age group. You don't have to, where we're seeing some of the resistance among his kind of age demographics. And so we're being targeted and trying to reach out and encourage them to get a vaccine. We had General Correll on the press conference yesterday. I thought he had a very, very compelling story. You know, he hires healthy men and women to serve. He himself is very healthy, but still, even doing all the protocols, came down with COVID-19, ended up being in the hospital, and, for a week. And so, you know, even those that are in really good shape can be impacted by this. Now, we know that, you know, our most vulnerable are elderly and those with underlying conditions, but His reason for being at the press conference was to encourage people to step up and get a vaccine, not only to protect themselves, but to protect their community in this state and to really continue to get things back to normal. And so we're doing pretty well. 91% of Iowans 65 years and older have at least had one dose. 54% of Iowans 18 and up have received one dose, and about 39% have been fully vaccinated. We're about 15th in the country. So we want to just keep moving those metrics. We're doing more micro clinics. We've got, you know, some mobile units going into neighborhoods, working with churches. I mean, we're just trying to figure out where we can get in front of people and at least just have the conversation about why it's a good idea to do this. So. And this is honestly, this is what we're seeing across the country. States are starting to plateau. Halting J&J usage didn't help. We've seen that kind of raise some hesitancy among not only Iowans, but Americans across the country. And so they're all good vaccines. We're hoping J&J can be brought back on the market with maybe a warning label. But right now we have Pfizer and Moderna, and they're both safe and very, very effective vaccines.
One question I have for you on this, maybe it looks a little bit off the mark of the COVID, but as you identified, the younger generation is reluctant or hesitant to get any type of vaccines, not just COVID, but any vaccines.
And I was kind
of wondering, you know, is there a fear in the back of your mind that we may be dealing with some diseases and illnesses that have long since we've almost forgotten about just because of the younger generation has not stepped up to take vaccines? And I'm looking at, you know, polio or measles, mumps, these type of things that we were given vaccines for when we were a young child. Are the younger generation, are we going to maybe have a resurgence of some of those past diseases because of the reluctance?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's really attributed to that, and it's just they're healthy overall, and they don't think that it impacts them. And the friends that they know that have had COVID, you know, they've had just pretty much mild symptoms, and that's been kind of the trajectory throughout COVID-19. So I think it has a lot to do with they're just healthy, they don't perceive themselves, you know, people that they know when they've got it, they haven't been severely impacted. And, you know, some of our vaccines are, of course, mandated. This is not. I don't see that happening. So I don't think, you know, there's any concern of seeing a resurgence in that. I think you have seen that in some of the other states, but I don't think we have in Iowa.
Now, you know, there's some fear, I guess, among people, particularly now that the news media, and I'm going to be critical of my own industry here a little bit, but sometimes we have a tendency to maybe overblown and make mountains out of molehills, but Obviously, Johnson & Johnson having the 6 cases of blood clotting issues among some females that have been identified. But then when you look at that in perspective against the over 6 million doses that have been given, it's a very small percentage. But do Iowans have any reason or need to be concerned or worried about getting a vaccination?
No, and in fact, the EU, they've reversed that, and they have said that the benefits far, far outweigh the very, very rare incidences of the blood clotting. It's 1 in 1 million, and so many other drugs and like contraceptives that are on the market today, it's 1 in 1,000. And so, you know, that is a real, real rare case, and a lot of it was just making sure that the healthcare professionals and knew that the proper treatment, if you did happen to have result from the J&J vaccine. So you just can't use heparin; you have to use another immune in identifying it, and that's really critical, I think, for those that have had it. So I don't. I think, you know, when I talked to doctors, they were just baffled about why they did that. Didn't think it was justified. They felt that this is a safe, you know, drug. But we'll continue to monitor. They're meeting again today, so we'll see what the FDA and the other organization that's meeting to review, whether they bring it back on or not. So we should have some insight today on what they're doing. But the European Union and several other countries have already moved to reinstate J&J.
All right. Let's move on to a little bit mental health is one topic I wanted to visit with you about. As you are aware, there is a proposal within the legislature to try to reform property tax and give some type of property tax relief, which most people are probably in favor of. But then when you tie it into mental health, we know that funding right now is through the counties for mental health. And there's a bill, I think it's 587, if I'm not mistaken, out of the Senate, that wants to reform the property tax bill. But unfortunately, what they're looking at is having the control of the mental health services placed in the hands of the state. And I just wanted to know your thoughts about the current situation compared to what's being proposed. Should we put that in the state's hands, or should we leave it into the county and regional system?
Well, one of the things that they're looking at, and it's not a state versus county, I think you'd still have, you know, we spent a lot of time doing comprehensive adult mental health reform, and then I'm proud to say we were able to, after talking about it for 20 years, we were able to implement a children's mental health system. And so in addition to that, we also have spent a lot of time putting the regions in place, the oversight boards, what the requirements of those regions are. Those are all statutorily driven, but really managed at the regional and county level. And so just like I proposed in the Invest in Iowa Act that I was working on last year prior to COVID, I do not believe that mental health should be funded through property taxes, and that's one of the reasons, and that was built in to the Invest in Iowa Act that we were working on last year. We're one of maybe two states that pays for a service through property tax dollars. Every other state funds it from the state level. And so we are working on the bill. We're taking a look at it. I'm supportive of it. We're taking a look at all of the tax proposals that we have this legislative session, and kind of how we bring that together and move forward. But overall, I believe in the concept. That's why I proposed Invest in Iowa last year. We have to make sure that we are sustaining the mental health system that we put in place, and that we've got a built-in way to increase additional funding. And that bill does that through capturing some of the sales tax revenue. So it's got a kind of an inflationary factor built in to the bill also. So, but just bottom line is, I agree with the concept. I don't think that mental health should be funded through property taxes. I think it's a state responsibility. I think we just need to make sure that we have proper oversight, that it will be administered at the local level. So it's a partnership, just like we've developed a lot of great partnerships in cooperation, collaboration over this last year. dealing with COVID, and that's how we should be operating this.
Now, as you know, the Senate and the House chambers are split on this. Even though that both chambers are controlled by the Republican Party, the House is saying they're trying to maybe put the brakes on this a little bit to say that the state wouldn't be ready to, if mm-hmm. this was to be passed, to be able mm-hmm. to implement mental health services.
It's phased in. I disagree with that. It's phased in. We've been talking about this for a long, long time. This is not a new conversation. That's one of the reasons that I, again, put it in the Invest in Iowa Act last year, because we have had multiple conversations about funding mental health off property taxes. So this is not a new conversation. I think one of the concerns that the speaker brought up was just to make sure that we had the guardrails in place, that we are holding people accountable, that we're, you know, we're funding the things that we should be funding, that we're talking about what are the what are they supposed to be providing, and does that need to change? Do we need to take a look at that? Should we have a built-in review annually to make sure that the core requirements that we're funding are the appropriate ones? Are there things that we can do better to streamline and bring more efficacy into the process? You know, one of the things with the mental health regions and the adult mental health reform was the access centers. And I think the legislation said we should have at least 6 in the state, and I think we're up to 4 right now, so that's been a really positive move forward. And it really helps provide treatment to individuals and help with the, make sure that they have the wraparound support that they need, and it keeps them out of the jails. And so, again, that's just a real win-win for everybody.
How would we go about funding mental health if it was under the state control? You mentioned about the Incentive Iowa program, but would that come through sales tax, or if we're not getting it from property tax?
Yeah. So there's funding mechanism in, you know, with state dollars coming in that we're looking at maybe, and this is a long-term phase-out, if we use backfill for some of that, we're looking at using it, not using it. But what I was talking about, the kind of the inflationary growth factor is capturing a percent of sales tax growth that would go into the system. And then, you know, there's a way to equalize it. If we have some areas that would need additional funds, there's a pool that they would be able to take a look at. So those are kind of some of the details that are in the bill, but some of the things that we're looking at to make sure that we can sustain it going forward.
All right. Let's move our attention to broadband. At the start of the session, you, of course, during your condition of the state address, asked the state legislature to appropriate $150 million over the next per year, over the next 3 years, for $450 million, expand broadband, high-speed broadband, into all areas of Iowa, particularly our rural areas and such. And then just to kind of, you know, we've seen some of this started to take place up here in Northwest Iowa. You, of course, a year ago, October, you and former Secretary of Agriculture, Undersecretary Bill Northey, were in Haywarden, and mm-hmm. we saw some of the expansion there by a local company that is broadening the broadband into the rural area. So anyway, my question is this. It looks like that the legislature might settle on a figure of $100 million, and that's just for this year. They haven't really indicated that they would like to do it over the 3 years, as you've asked. What's your comfort level on that, allocate $100 million as opposed to $150 million for the next 3 years?
Well, I can guarantee you there's not another state in the country that's allocating $100 million into broadband. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the policy. We're trying to make sure that we're moving everything. So July 1st, when that money becomes available, we are ready to go and start to, you know, get fiber in the ground or get in whatever we need to do to connect all of Iowa. You know, we still have additional federal dollars that are coming into the state because of some of the changes made by this administration. The very first CARES funding that we received, we have additional money now that's become available through that. We have the second, the third, and now the fourth. They're talking about an infrastructure bill. So, you know, we just need to see what kind of guidance is included in that and what kind of strings are attached. So I'm pretty confident that we can get to the 150 if we need it, with when I add into that the federal funds that are available, and when you add into that just the USDA funds that are available, we've done a pretty good job. That's what we did up when Northy was there and I was there and your private company, of stacking that funding, and that's what you should do. Private sector investment, state and federal, and by doing that, we really can scale these projects and make our money, you know, the money go even further. So that's what we'll continue to do, and so we'll meet that objective, and then we'll take a look at where we're at next year and what those next steps look like. And I did say to the legislature, you know, I need to demonstrate that, you know, this is the right dollar amount. We can get it out. The company's ready to go, and I think the case is going to be made when I go back to the legislature next year that we're heading in the right direction and we made good use of that funding.
All right. And on the topic of the legislature, of course, they are scheduled to end on April 30th. We're not sure if they'll be able to achieve that deadline or not. But the bills that have been passed so far and the issues that they are still working on, now granted, you know, you can't really comment on too much on things that are still in the process, but bills that have been passed so far, your general comments and thoughts about the action of the legislature this year?
Well, we're making progress. You know, we got 100%. We gave parents the options of 100% of the classroom. That was a priority. We did that early on. I've got the broadband policy through. I'm excited about that. We're working on my Students First Act, so we've made progress. There's about five components to that. We're still working on the Students First Scholarships, open enrollment, charter schools has passed out of the House. I feel pretty confident we're going to be able to get that done. I think if the pandemic has taught us anything, and what we've seen, we're in a better position in Iowa. Majority of our states had our kids in the classroom safely and responsibly since August. But when you look at some of these other states in the country and the time that these children have been out of school, it's just unconscionable. And it just reiterates that parents should have a choice in their children's education. And I believe that parents are going to be way more involved going forward. So I think that's a positive thing. We're working right now with both chambers on our comprehensive housing bill. We know that that's a priority that needs to happen, especially in rural Iowa. You know, we get them connected, and we have adequate child care, and we have adequate housing. We're going to be able to continue to grow not only our communities but the economy in our rural communities, so we're working on that. Child care, there's been several bills that have passed back and forth, and then I stood up the child care task force. They got 100 days, and then they're going to report back to me on kind of what short-term, long-term strategy looks like to address our child care. And then biofuels, we're working on that, which is, I think, pretty timely right now when you take a look at what's coming out of the administration. You know, it's you're not hearing much about biofuels. You know, it's between the Green New Deal, the 52% emissions cut proposed, just the money that they're putting into infrastructure. You know, I think this is a time when we need to take ownership of our future, and we can we have the infrastructure in place to really move and to really highlight how important it is for our biofuels industry, not only for consumer choice. It drives the economy in rural Iowa, it brings new jobs to the state, and it is a environmentally friendly option. And so we're still working on that bill as well.
All right. Sounds very good. Looks like our time is now limited. So, Governor, I just want to extend an invitation for you to come back up here to Plymouth County and Lamar's sometime in the near future. There's a couple of events that you might want to circle on your calendar. Ice Cream Days, which you've been here before for that. But then also, as you know, Lamar's is the start of RAGBRAI. It may not be all that bad to see if you wanted to participate on RAGBRAI, at least for a few miles anyway. I know Governor Branstad rode on RAGBRAI one time. And then, obviously, we've got our Plymouth County Fair. So all those things we'd like to have you come back for. And my last thing is, my question is, have you had your ice cream yet today?
No.
Well, you know, you got to eat ice cream. We want to keep Lamar's employed. So go out and buy some ice cream.
I agree, and that's I love it. I think, you know, between Senator Grassley and myself, we do our best job to keep Blue Bunny going strong. So anyway, that's a great idea about Rag Bri too, and who wants to miss Ice Cream Day? Not me. So, you know, thank you. I appreciate the offers.
All right. Governor, thanks very much for joining us. I've been visiting with the Honorable Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds.